on Commerce and Consumer Protection, Finance, and Policy to order. Today's Wednesday, March 23rd, 2020, and it's about 1:10 p.m. The first bill on the agenda is Senate File 3338 by Senator Dames. Senator Dames, I see you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would, first of all, I'd like to move Senate File 3338 be considered, passed, and moved to the floor. And with that, I have the A1 amendment.
All members, this is an author's amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment to Senate File 3338, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senator Dames, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senate File 3338 is a bill that relates to providing modifications or suspensions for certain requirements specific to specific instances. And this is related to insurance. And today we have two testifiers here. And if we could have the testifiers introduce themselves and proceed with their testimony, I would appreciate it.
Thank you. With Ms. Bassett from the Department of Commerce, if you could state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Helen Bassett. I'm the Government Affairs Liaison within the Minnesota Department of Commerce. And Chair, thank you for bringing this bill, Chair Dames, and for hearing the bill. We're here today to provide information on House File 3338, Regulatory Flexibility, commonly known as Life Stage. I'm here today with Fred Anderson from the department, who's Commerce's Chief Actuarial Officer. Mr. Anderson will walk us through the highlights of the bill, and he'll respond to member questions as requested.
Well, thank you. And Mr. Anderson, if you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes. My name is Fred Anderson. I'm the Chief Life Actuary at the Minnesota Department of Commerce.
Proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Helen. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator. I'm going to start by providing a very brief overview of the need for a statute revision to clarify the approvability of certain innovative long-term care insurance products. As background, insurance companies file innovative products with the Department of Commerce. Commerce reviews and approves the products if they are compliant with statutes. There's interest by the life insurance industry in developing innovative long-term care products to address non-medical needs, such as nursing home and home health care, as baby boomers age. There are certain products that combine life insurance and long-term care that are already clearly allowed. These tend to target the higher income markets. There is potential interest in developing a product for the middle income market. There's a concept called life stage, which acts as term life insurance at early ages and provides long-term care at older ages. Statute revision is needed to clarify the approvability of this type of product. Bill language is similar to Minnesota Statute Section 62S.34, allowing the commissioner flexibility to approve innovative products in limited circumstances. With the bill, the company would demonstrate that a product filed with Commerce is not clearly approvable under existing statute, provides reasonable benefits, and is in the best interest of the policyholder. It's anticipated that Commerce would approve such a product, even if long-term care benefits are not immediately available, because to keep premium rates reasonable, only a life insurance benefit would be available in early years. The last thing I'll say is other states have expressed interest in following Minnesota's lead on this issue. And that concludes my testimony.
Well, thank you. Members, any questions for either the author or the testifiers? Seeing none, Senator Dames, any final comments?
No, I think they've explained it all. And so with that said, Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion.
Senator Dames renews his motion to
pass
Senate File 3338 as amended and put it on general order and referred it to general orders. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senate File 3338 as amended is on its way to general orders. Next, we have Senate File 4345. Senator Dames, to your bill as 4345.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 4345. First, I move that Senate File 4345 be recommended to pass, to be considered recommended to pass and re-referred to the floor on general orders. And with that, Mr. Chair, I do have the A1 amendment.
Senator Dames moves the A1 amendment. It's an author's amendment. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senate File 4345, Senator Dames, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 4345 as amended. This proposal will clean up the current bullion coin statute to clarify the statute is limited to actions within Minnesota or with Minnesota customers. This proposal is related to the current litigation. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have a gentleman here to testify. And so if you would recognize the testifier, we will proceed with testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Kelly, if you could state your name for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is John Kelly. I am the Government Affairs Director at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I want to thank Chair Dames for carrying this bill for the department. As the chair stated, this bill makes changes to Minnesota statutes Chapter 80. It updates the bullion coin statute to reflect ruling in court to make it specific to Minnesota. Bullion coin, for folks that don't know, bullion refers to products that contain precious metals such as silver, gold, platinum, palladium, and other precious metals. This bill will benefit consumers, whether they're buyers or sellers, in their financial transactions involving bullion coin within the jurisdiction of the state of Minnesota by ensuring that Minnesota statutes are updated to protect bullion coin transactions that occur within the state. We think this is an important consumer protection bill that we're trying to follow the court's instructions and get this Minnesota specific, and I'll stop there and stand ready for any questions.
I think we'll proceed with all the testimony and then go to questions. We have a Mr. Thomas Stajzinski. Please take the stand and, yep, go ahead and just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great, thank you.
What's your name and who you represent?
Okay. My name is Tom Stajzinski, and I guess I represent myself, or I have a small coin business called Tom the Coin Guy. I would like to start off by thanking John, because we had a disagreement and he worked with me and we came to a resolution, and that's part of the A1 amendment that was there. But I wanted to talk a little bit about that A1 amendment and the change that was made. The original bill was going to take out the coin show exemption, and I wanted to explain to everybody here why the coin show exemption is so important. And basically what a coin show is, well, let me start by saying that when ADG was first put forward, it was put forward because we had some big problems with telemarketers who were overcharging for products and targeting some of our most vulnerable. And they put in place a coin show exemption. And the reason is coin shows are really great for consumer education. You have multiple coin dealers there, and a consumer can shop around and find the best deal, and they can be educated. I set up at about 12 shows a year, and anyone that sets up at a coin dealer show will tell you that they've run into a consumer that they've had to break the bad news that the product they bought from a telemarketer was way overpriced. But when they leave, they have that knowledge and they know not to go to that again. So I would like to thank the committee for hearing my testimony, and thank you, Chairman, for agreeing to the A1 amendment.
Thank you. And please stay around if there's any questions, further questions later. And then we'll move to Mr. Eric Cardell. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eric Cardell, and I'm the attorney that represented essentially the people of Minnesota in a lawsuit based on the law that you passed. And you passed it based on advice given to you by the Department of Commerce. And so I brought this lawsuit, and then we found out that the committee and legislature was not properly advised on the dormant commerce clause. So that that restricts the ability of state laws to regulate transactions out of the state. So my concern is that Department of Commerce is advising you again without detailing the results of the lawsuit. So the U.S. District Court Judge Wilhelmina Wright said that the statute was unconstitutional. So there should be discussion of what's constitutional, what's not, before you pass an amendment, because the lawsuit's on appeal right now to the U.S. Court of Appeals in St. Louis. So three appellate judges who are very experienced in the law will be opining on what's constitutional and what's not. And I think that the committee should wait to find out what those three judges think before you try to fix something. You should know how to fix it. So you're relying on advice from the Department of Commerce to fix something that's before the U.S. Court of Appeals regarding how this should be fixed. And so one of the arguments is that this is such a massive problem with the statute that it shouldn't be severed and the whole thing should be thrown out. So I'm here to tell you, representing the people and giving you some advice, that maybe you should wait to address the problems with this law until after that proceeding, particularly because of the advice you're getting from the Department of Commerce. I know the legislature can do whatever it wants. It doesn't have to wait till the lawsuit concludes. But the committee and the legislature isn't getting the proper advice from the executive agency. Otherwise, we would have started with the court opinion. We would have read the court opinion. At the end of the court opinion, it says, Minnesota statute section 80G.07 is stricken. And then the words in this state are stricken. So that's pretty serious stuff, right? When a court says your law is stricken. So you go back, you say, how do we get in a position to enact a law that's stricken? Well, you relied on Department of Commerce advice. Now they're back here not telling you the whole story, in my view. And so then you would have to do your own independent research before voting on this to figure it out. And what I'm telling you is that next month, the Assistant Attorney General and I will be arguing this before the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Eighth Circuit. It'd be better for you to wait. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions from members? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate Mr. Cardle's testimony. I know I have objected to certain pieces of legislation on the floor of the Minnesota Senate on the basis of constitutionality, only to be reminded that that doesn't necessarily carry a lot of weight with people in the legislature sometimes. But point taken, Mr. Cardle. I would ask Senator Dames or perhaps Mr. Kelly, what is the advantage to this bill being passed now and not waiting? What are we weighing here?
Mr. Kelly, response?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I want to be very careful about what I say as both testifiers are currently in litigation with the Department of Commerce, but we at the Department of Commerce are trying to comply with the orders that instructed the department in the lawsuit that the words in this state and that the transactions had to be specific to Minnesota law. And so we are trying to comply with that order. I don't want to get into whether the entire statute should be struck, but we are trying to protect Minnesota consumers while they engage in these transactions, and we're trying to fix the law per the judge's instruction where they said that the transactions and the language and the registrations and such needed to be put into, be very clearly in the state or Minnesota transaction, and that's what the department is doing. I don't want to speak to the merits of waiting or not waiting. The decision was made internally to move forward with this bill to get the bill, to get the statute as it currently stands in conformity with being only in Minnesota.
Senator Kent.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And I guess I would just ask Senator Dames if you have anything you would want to add to that, since obviously you're in a different position.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Kent. We are going to go ahead and move with the bill. The next stop will be the floor, and very likely that's going to be a while. So if there's something that comes out of the court systems, we should still have plenty of time then to react to that, either by not hearing the bill on the floor or by making the an amendment on the floor to correct the bill to meet whatever the courts are saying has to be done at that point in time.
Any other questions from members? Anyone else here wishing to testify on this bill, either for or against? Seeing none, Senator Dames, any final comments?
No final comments, just renew my motion.
Senator Dames renews his motion that Senate File 4345, as amended, is referred to the general orders. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senate File 4345 is re-referred as amended to general orders.
Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Members were waiting for one of the authors of the bills here to come down so we could proceed. Hopefully, in just a few minutes, we can have, hopefully, Senator Cran will be able to be down here. We're trying to track him down now. Members, I think we'll go ahead and take a 5-minute recess, and then we'll reconvene in 5 minutes. Thank you. Thank you.
Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection back to order. Senator Cran, Senate File 3036.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe I have an amendment here for the bill. Do you have it on hand? I think it is the A1 amendment.
Okay, so Senator Eichhorn, would you pass Senate File 3036 to be considered, passed, and moved to finance?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 3636 be brought up for discussion and passed to the Senate Finance Committee.
Next, Senator Cran, would you move the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Eichhorn, please.
I'll move the A2
amendment. Yes, we'll get that right. Thank you, Senator Eichhorn. Senator Cran, to the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so what Senate File 3036 does is really looks for an opportunity to...
Senator Cran, let's discuss the A2 amendment first so we can move it.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. What the A2 amendment does is it identifies or more clearly breaks down somebody with a conviction or somebody who's been involved in the justice system and only addressing licenses or licensure issues of somebody who's been previously convicted. To clarify for the purposes of fiscal note and planning who this applies to and what the scope is. It doesn't change any of the licensee or the agency requirements, their processes. It just more clearly defines and articulates who this bill would be targeted for. And it's really targeted for agencies that require licensure and background checks. So we're trying to prune off some of those licensures or the many licenses we have that don't require complete background checks.
Thank you, Senator Cran. For the record, correction, this is the actual A5 amendment. All those in favor of the A5 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment carries. Senator Cran to Senate File 3036 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this bill does is what it's looking to do is create a vehicle for anybody who's been convicted post-serving their sentence, convicted of a crime, and then prior to them engaging in either an education or furthering their education when they're seeking a career path, if they've got identified fields which require licensure and those that require background checks, what this bill does is allows them to do a preliminary background check prior to them engaging accumulating or acquiring the particular education or going down that path, so they have a clear view that once they meet that criteria from an education on the licensing side, they also meet from a criminal background check to know that up front prior to actually asking for a full licensure. And that really is the extent of the bill, Mr. Chair. I think it's a really good bill from a perspective of if somebody's in this position who's acquired some education, either most recently after they've been released and or inside one of our institutions, and they're willing or they're actually looking for career paths, this would be a really worthwhile investment that somebody's that forward thinking and preparing for a career. So that's what the bill does, Mr. Chair, and I'll stand for questions.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Peter Brickwood, Assistant Commissioner at the Commerce Department. Mr. Chair, the Department of Commerce is supportive of Senator Cran's bill. We think this is a really interesting way to try to open up the professions that we regulate at the agency, of which we issue licenses and registrations of a number of different types. To folks who may have not been able to otherwise been understand whether or not before they put in the time and energy and expense of going through pre-licensed education, to be able to know ahead of time whether or not there might be something that would preclude them from being able to go through the licensure process. This has in concept sort of a look and feel to an informal process that the department already employs for licenses issued in the real estate and insurance areas and has for many years, and we think this process will benefit all of the registrations that we do as well. Our financial institutions division issues registrations for investment advisors and other securities-related professionals. So the department expects that we will have some small costs because that's work that we are not doing today, but we would absorb into our current informal process the work in our licensing unit. I do have a question perhaps for counsel, and maybe Senator Cran, this is something we could follow up with you as well afterwards on, just around the language around the in the amendment around the scope paragraph and whether or not that would be read to change the universe of licenses or registrations that would potentially be able to benefit from this process. So I don't know if that is something that is intended to affect the license types that we administer at the department, but Senator Cran, perhaps that's something we could follow up with you after the hearing on.
Mr. Chair? And Mr. Brickweed? Yeah, and so the clarification is really to focus on those that require the background check. You know, what licenses require the background check and to get that pre-clearance. And so to bring some scope into it, this bill probably will have six stops before we get done. And I think 24 agencies have been involved in the fiscal note so far. And so they're still trying to wrap up the fiscal note as we speak. And Mr. Chair, there's also a talk of the cost. What is this? And so once we get that fiscal note, the modification there may be there to provide a reduced rate for the preliminary licensure review. And so that needs to be determined. We're still waiting on that fiscal note. But Mr. Chair, I'd also like to add, and maybe for Mr. Brickweed, is that it doesn't change any of the current statutes as it relates to the requirements for that particular license. Depending on the gap or the time between the pre-authorization, it doesn't impact the ability. Many licenses are issued with conditions. Doesn't impact those regardless of the time frame. So the goal is to make sure that and in fact, I think the amendment also covered if state law changed were prescriptive in who can no longer apply for what careers because of licensing. Sexual predators, I think, are the only ones that are called out for certain ones today. If something were there, this pre-clearance would not preclude or override that state law if it were so to change from the time they made the pre-application to the actual final application seeking the license.
Mr. Stang, would you like to weigh in? Are you good? Or?
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, if you look on lines 13 to 17, it limits the scope to licenses where does not apply if the license does not require an applicant to report their criminal record or require an applicant to produce a criminal background check. So I haven't been real close to the drafting of this bill nor the amendment, but it seems like that is a bit of a limiter on scope. And I think Senator Cran pretty well spelled out how he came to that.
Thank you, Mr. Stang. Mr. Brickwood, anything further?
Mr. Chairman, with that clarification, much appreciated, Senator. We'll follow up with you after the hearing. And as I said earlier, this is very much in line with the department's own strategic goal to try to open up licensure to all Minnesotans. So we appreciate Senator Cran bringing it forward and are supportive of the concept.
Thank you. Ms. Anna Odegaard.
Thanks.
She's on, sir.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Anna Odegaard, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition. We're a statewide coalition of 135 nonprofit organizations working to reduce barriers to economic mobility. We have been working in partnership with the Justice Action Network, the Institute for Justice, and the Council of State Governments Justice Center to advance this legislation that creates better transparency in the state licensure process. We're very grateful to Senator Cran for taking the lead on this legislation, and of course to Chair Dames for hearing the bill. The Minnesota Asset Building Coalition considers this transparency and licensing bill a top priority because many of our member organizations offer workforce development services, including for individuals working on reintegrating into their community after release from incarceration. Lack of transparency in the licensing process is a barrier to work for many of those clients. For instance, my colleague Ken Sariakoff from Goodwill Easter Seals, which is a member of the Asset Building Coalition, he explained to me that because there's currently no formal process for people to find out if their criminal history will affect their eligibility for a license, instead people rely on rumor So someone hears from someone with a similar conviction that they were denied a license, and as a result, sometimes his clients are reluctant to even try to qualify for a vocational path that could lead to a family-sustaining job because they can't afford to make the investment in that training or education, in the licensure exam, without knowing if there's a possibility of licensure at the end. This may seem like a problem affecting only a small number of people, but roughly 30% of Americans have a criminal history, and about 22% of jobs in Minnesota require some kind of license or registration that can be denied based on a criminal history. A straightforward process for people who have a criminal history to find out how their record would impact their eligibility for a professional license benefits businesses that need qualified licensed workers. It supports family stability and reduces recidivism. Thank you so much for considering this bill in your committee and for the opportunity to testify.
Well, thank you, Ms. Odegaard. Next, we have Corey Johnson. Hello, Corey. Welcome to the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee. If you would state your name and who you represent, proceed with your testimony.
Yes, I guess it's morning over there. I'm in Maryland, so it's
actually
afternoon. Okay, awesome. So we're good. We're on the same page. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Corey Johnson. I'm an attorney at the Council of State Governments Justice Center. A little bit of the Council of State Governments Justice Center, for those who are not familiar, we are a national nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that combines the power of a membership association representing state officials in all three branches of government with policy and research expertise to develop strategies that increase public safety and strengthen communities. In the face of unprecedented financial challenges, the Justice Center is primarily focused on supporting states in economic recovery and job creation. That is why we have launched a national initiative to support states in adopting best practices to reduce barriers to occupational and professional licensing for people with criminal records. In recent years, the majority of U.S. states have enacted or expanded robust occupational and professional licensing policies designed to lower barriers to work for people with criminal records while still continuing to protect public safety. These policies are based on three basic principles of practices. One, a licensing body should have the authority to deny applicants with past convictions that directly relate to the tasks and duties of a licensed activity. Two, workers should not be barred from occupational licensure solely on the basis of a past conviction. And three, licensing policies and practices involving determination about the criminal history of applicants should be transparent and consistently applied. SF 3036 would require a pre-application process for licensing boards. Currently, justice-impacted individuals who are seeking an occupational license are only made aware of their disqualifications for reasons related to their criminal record after the submission of their application materials for that license. This requires individuals with criminal records to fulfill all educational training requirements with uncertainty as to their ability to receive the license with their criminal history. Allowing prospective licensees to receive a determination about whether their criminal history will be disqualifying before investing time and resources to pursue the license will not only increase transparency in the licensure process, but also create more equitable standards for notification of disqualification. There are nearly 30 states across the country that have implemented this particular best practice, and it has shown to significantly expand opportunities for economic mobility without jeopardizing public safety. We have a bunch of materials here at CSG Justice Center, so if anyone needs anything, please feel free to let me know or send me an email at kjohnson@csg.org. Thank you so much for having me, and we encourage the committee to favorably consider SF 3036.
Well, thank you, Ms. Johnson. And if you could stay with us in case there's some questions that would be directed your way, we would appreciate it. Are there any other testifiers to testify on Senate File 3036? Seeing none, yeah. Members, any questions? Senator Port.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Curran, I just want to thank you for bringing this bill. The more that we can increase transparency, the more that we can open up opportunities for people returning to their communities is an investment in the future of Minnesota. I really applaud this creative way of thinking about that. We have heard a lot about, you know, folks hearing through the rumor mill, exactly as Ms. Odegaard said, that they can't get licensed, and people hearing around them, oh, I can't get licensed for anything then. And it really can be a barrier to adding, you know, giving people an opportunity in our workforce. So I appreciate you bringing this bill. I think it's got some great ideas in here, and I look forward to seeing it move along.
Senator Cran, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Port. I agree. It's a good bill. Hard to believe it's taken this many steps, but it is a good. Once we get the fiscal note, we'll look and see what that is and to determine if there's some other incentives we can provide on the front side. But anybody who's seeking, thoughtful enough to seek that type of career and already has some education or is seeking education, it'll be one of our best investments we've made to get them gainfully employed in a career. So it's an easy bill to carry.
Members, other questions? Members, other questions? Seeing none, Senator Eichhorn renews his motion that Senate File 3036 be passed and re-referred to Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senator Cran, Senate File 3036 is on its way to Finance. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Next, members, we have Senate File 3636. Senator Utke. Process for approving of structured settlement amendments. Senator Housley, would you like to move Senate File 3036 be discussed and requested to be forwarded to Finance?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
And you have the A2 amendment, is that correct, Senator Utke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do.
Senator Housley, would you like to move the A2 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll move the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Housley. Senator Utke, would you just go through the A2 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And for members, the bill that we have before us is a structured settlement bill, and I can give you a little information on that if you would like, but you'll see with the
Senator Utke, if we could do the A2 amendment so that we can move that.
Okay.
And then we'll come back to the bill as amendment.
Yep.
As amended.
And what the A2 has in it is, as it spells out, our bill was originally, everything was referred to as the commissioner, and the commissioner being the commissioner of commerce. Now we're bringing in the secretary of state's office. So that's what this amendment does, is update the language for us.
Thank you, Senator Utke. Members, any questions on the A2 amendment? There being no questions, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The motion carries. The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Utke to Senate File 3036 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, the Senate File 3636 is what we call our structured settlement bill. Structured settlement is an arrangement for periodic payments. Structured settlement payment rights may be sold, and that process is called a transfer. With this bill, we are modifying our current statutes, addressing some of the shortfalls that we currently have in law, and updating it using two sources. Those that are familiar with the National Council of Insurance Legislators, known as NCOIL, this bill incorporates the NCOIL Model Act language, and then we've added the registration part and the bonding part. So it's a surety bond included to help tighten this up, regulate it, and we're following with this additional language. Language that's been passed already in Georgia, Louisiana, and Nevada. It's kind of the next step, and we're have that before us here in Minnesota. And once ours is passed, and we're gonna add our name to that list, and I participate with the NCOIL organization, and this will now be what we update our Model Act language with in July. So we are working with what is the kind of the latest and the greatest of trying to put some guardrails around the structured settlement process. And so with that, Mr. Chair, We are changing the proposed registration from the Department of Commerce over to the Secretary of State's office. As I mentioned, the three states that have already done this, two of them did use their Secretary of State's office, the other used their equivalent to our Department of Commerce. So it is a common to use both. Because it is a business filing and enforced by the courts, it aligns better with the Secretary of State's functions. And currently, we're in conversations with our Secretary of State's office, and they're willing to take on this responsibility and to do it under their normal business transactions and filings. So as I understand it, there's no additional costs too, which is great. And with that, we've got a little bit left as we work with our stakeholders. As Mr. Neubauer knows, he's sat through a couple sessions of civil law with this. We're pretty much, we're getting close, but of course we last were in front of you in that committee on Thursday. We've got those final things yet to do, but if there's any questions, Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to answer them. I know we've got a couple testifiers listed here that are willing to answer questions. It's up to you.
I think what we'll do is go through talk to your two testifiers and then take the questions at the end. So first, We have Mr. Joel Carlson. And Joel, welcome to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection. Please state your name and who you represent and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. And as Senator Uckey indicated, we do have an active stakeholder group that is working out the issues between the House and Senate on this issue. And we very much appreciate your support for moving this forward, because this is an odious practice that we would like to see some better guardrails placed in for Minnesota consumers. So with that, I'd be happy to answer questions. But most of the issues we have are not commerce related. So.
Well, thank you. And I believe we have another testifier, Sarah Strong. And I'm going to mispronouncing that last name, Belial.
Perfect, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. please state your name and who you represent and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Sarah Strong Belial with Cook Girard Associates, and I'm here representing the National Association of Settlement Purchasers, or NASP, and we are in support of Senator Utke's bill. I do have some prepared comments. I think I'm going to keep those short and just see if members have questions, but we think the registration aspect of this bill is very important. It is going to provide additional transparency and consumer protections. To Mr. Carlson's point, we are working in a stakeholder group. It's a bit of an old school approach. We're actually getting together in a room with House and Senate authors and having negotiations, and we're very happy about that. NASP has participated in all 50 states and in Congress when states have been setting their structured settlement purchase laws, and they're pleased to be part of the group working on this bill. And I would also like to thank the Secretary of State's office for being very willing to engage in this process, and they have been great to work with. We have a little bit more work on their specific language to make sure that the registration process best aligns with their current practices and systems, but we appreciate their willingness to take this on, and as well as the willingness and interest of the other stakeholders who have been working on this for a really long time. And we're pretty confident that we're going to be able to get to a really good bill by the end of session, hopefully before the end of session. So I'll stand for any questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And members, any questions for Senator Utke or the testifiers? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, to everybody who's been working on this, I know this is a really important thing that we're doing. Senator Utke, thank you for making this happen, because I think this will make a huge difference for many Minnesotans. One issue that has been brought to my attention that I just wanted to ask, and I appreciate that conversations are still going on, that this is still a bit of a work in progress, but an issue that was brought to my attention is if there's some kind of notification that as we're doing that we work on a notification process if court revokes or suspends. Is that part of the conversation?
Ms. Belial.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kent, yes, it is. Currently, the bill language, it would be an automatic revocation, and both originally the Department of Commerce, where this would have fallen in the original bill language, and the Secretary of State's office has flagged that and said there will need to be a proactive notification. They're not monitoring every court hearing, and that's very reasonable. So that's exactly the part that we're still working on and just weren't quite ready for getting drafting on that this morning, but we're confident that we can sort that out. So very fair point. Thank you. Thank you.
Senator Kent, follow-up. Members, other questions? Members, any other questions? Seeing none, Senator Housley removes her motion that Senate File 3636, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion carries. Senate File 3036 has been passed and re-referred to Finance. Members, we're about ready to conclude the day. Are there any questions on what we expect next week or anything like that? Senator Port.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Would just love to have an idea of what to expect in the next week or two as we start moving towards end of session.
Next week, our intentions now are to have the Commerce Committee's budget gone through next week in this regular committee time. So we'll try to get that posted earlier, but we will be doing, that's our intentions now, is do the Commerce Committee's budget the following Monday. Then probably one of the first Mondays after we get back from break, we'll be doing a informational hearing on the alternate fuels bill and the agreement they have with the retail organization. So that'll probably be the first Monday after deadline, or after we get back from the Easter break. That's what we're at that point. Other questions? Seeing none, the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection and Finance and Policy is adjourned.